Slayton, and in this podcast, we interview all kinds of artists from different mediums and backgrounds, and we talk about their current work, and we try to find some background information about the art and films that may influence them. Today we talk to someone who I've been a fan of for a few years, who makes mostly fiber-based soft sculptures, and they exhibit all over the world and are very well known in the art world. The first time I saw her work was in one of my art books that I have by the Jealous Curator. And our guest this week is Natalie Baxter. A thread that I really love, pun intended, about each of our guests so far and with the ones that are scheduled in the near future, is there's a link of social advocacy. And I know that to me it seems obvious that we should be making work and talking about what's happening socially in our world, because we need to do that in order to have any changes be made for the better. But just recently I got just kind of overloaded with seeing stuff on social media that seemed too aloof. And I'm not talking about making posts that aren't related to politics, because that's needed, of course, but following artists who maybe never say anything about what's going on ever. And luckily, it's pretty rare that I see that, but I do still see it. And I don't think it's okay. I don't recommend what I did instead, though, and that was to unfollow everyone on my art Instagram except for Dolly Parton, who is great. I love Dolly Parton. And I have multiple Instagram accounts, one for the podcast, a personal one for my family, but it was still kind of a lonely and eerie world when it was only Dolly, which is bizarre to say because Dolly's great. But what I love about this guest is that Natalie has made work for the duration of her art career. She's responded to really complicated personalities and complicated people who we see that are on the other side of progress, people who are trying to halt progress and trying to stick to a more macho and deliberately harmful way of living. And the way that she's combat that type of persona is with her soft sculpture work. And if you go to her website or do a quick Google search of Natalie Baxter, you'll see her gun series. And they're amazing because they're quilted, they're in bright neon colors, there's all kinds of textures, they're droopy, they're comical, and they're still sinister, and it's really hard to do that with work. It's hard to have so many facets come out that are so layered. And in response to these guns, she got a lot of press for it. That was great. And then, of course, and you can read about this too, some alt-right people saw her work and wrote about it in a really prominent alt-right blog. And some troll comments commenced. And the amazing thing that she did was she took these horrific extremist commentary, complete nonsense phrases that were thrown at her work which is, it's great that they had that response because it just proved even more what the work is about. But she took these comments and she made them into these suffragette banners. And so you see these like super brightly colored text pieces made out of fabric, and it's just a literal verbatim reflection of what these people really think and what some of the things that they say. And it's so powerful because there's no altering these comments, you know, it's just what they say. So, and it's terrifying. And what she did with it is so cool. And it's so powerful. And it's, in her own words, she's completely turned these comments on their head and just kind of flipped their meaning just by holding a mirror up to them. And so in this episode of Painting in Motion, it's our first time talking to Natalie, but we're talking about her newest body of work. And we talk about her 6-month residency that she's in the midst of with her family. She has a partner and a small child, and just different ways of living in our times right now, as an artist and as someone who works full time and has a family and is parenting full time as well. So I thought it was a really great talk. And I hope you enjoy. My youngest is 1-year-old. And I know that you have a little one too, and I think you're at an artist residency right now. So I'd love to ask you about that experience with having been to residencies before, but how different it is as a family, because that's something that I've not experienced yet, and I'm so curious about. So what is it like so far, and how long have you been doing this as a family?
So, yeah, this is the first residency I've done with a child. So I have I guess she will soon be 18 months in a couple of days. So probably around the same age as your child. Yeah, it's so great. I feel like this is a weird circumstance because COVID. So I don't know if I would have thought about doing, actually, I probably would have done a family residency, but because of COVID, we were in our apartment a lot, as everybody is and was and still is, I guess. And we were in a railroad apartment in Ridgewood, Queens, and it was just kind of slowly starting to close in on us. So this opportunity arose to do this residency. It's a 7 months residency in at the Wasaic Project in Wasaic, New York. And we jumped at the opportunity because we get a whole house because of COVID. Well, actually, I think they do family residencies anyway, and you get a whole house if you're doing the family.
Okay.
But all of the artists that are doing a residency right now have their own house because they don't want a ton of artists crammed into the same living quarters.
Right.
So amazing.
Yeah, so that's excellent. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like that's something that would be important to experience, of course, anytime, but for a time like this, there has to be more relief to be able to still be creative and know that it's safe and everything too.
Yeah.
And you've been here, I think, before. I think I've seen where you've had work there before. So what is it about, I guess, this particular residency? I've had friends have gone here. I think you might know one of my next guests. It's Tarikov from Prince Rama, or formerly of Prince Rama, and she's been there before. What is it about this residency that's made you come back to it?
I love the location, first of all. So it's like, I think in the past, I've done this residency twice before, so this is my third time, but never with a child. But I think it's a very laid back residency. It's very, a little bit of kind of DIY mentality of like less structure, I guess. Like they're still doing visiting artists over Zoom, which usually if it wasn't COVID, they would bring people up from the city and they'd like spend the day, they'd do an artist talk, they'd do studio visits, but now they're all over Zoom. So they're still like that structure, but it's very like, come to this if you want to. If you don't want to, that's fine. Like if you want to spend the whole residency reading or doing whatever, it's there's not like communal meals like some other residencies. It's very kind of you're off on your own. And I like that aspect of it. I like the location. So we're right off the train line. So it's really convenient to go back into the city if you need to. It's a beautiful area. It kind of reminds me of Kentucky, where I'm from, like the landscape and the
right
and some like aspects of the people. And yeah,
that's really great. And I wonder too, with your daughter, has there been, and maybe where she's so little it might not make the biggest difference, but has there been any kind of maybe not necessarily adjustment, but maybe does she seem excited to be somewhere different from before? Or has she just kind of gone with the flow and not really seemed to notice as much? Or how has it been?
Yeah, she loves it here. So, but I don't know. I mean, you have two kids, so you know I'm just kind of experiencing her development as she develops. So it might be like, I don't know. Like for example, when we first got here, she would go to the front door and be like, outside. Like, I want to go outside. You know, like that was kind of a new concept. Cause in our apartment, she didn't get to just like walk in and out of the front door. You know what I mean? So, and then like, we'll be reading a book about a farm and horses. And then we can walk out to the backyard and there's horses on the hill. And she can like, she's seen like goats and horses and like animals, and she can run around outside, and it's just nice.
Right. And I feel like I've had friends a year ago I had friends that moved from where I live. I live in Eastern Tennessee.
Oh,
originally from Los Angeles. So I went from living in a big city to living in the South. And I've had friends that went from living here to a big city, and they have an almost 4-year-old. And it's been amazing to see the response to just having a different atmosphere. Yeah. And it's nice. And I mean, there's things I'm sure they miss here too, but I feel like it's only beneficial for kids just to have more experiences and to see different ways of living. So I love
that. Where are you?
So I'm based, it's Johnson City, Tennessee, which is really close to Kentucky. It's right on the edge of both Asheville, North Carolina, and then Bristol, Virginia. So we're right at the tip, which is cool. So I'm not too far from Knoxville. But have you been here, you say?
I've been through there. I don't know if I really have spent time there, but I feel like I know some other people from Johnson City.
Okay, it's small for a city, but we have East Tennessee State University, which is where I went to art school, and we've had a lot of really great artists, and we have a couple of smaller galleries here, but it's interesting, the few times I've met people who have a connection here, there's a really good art scene, I guess, here, which is growing, but
I do a residency in Eastern Tennessee, in Chattanooga.
Okay.
August. Have you heard of Stoveworks?
No, I haven't. But I've been in Chattanooga and only know a little bit more about the music scene, but I don't know about the art scene there.
You should check out this organization called Stoveworks. So it's actually the woman who runs it used to work here at the Wasatic Project. And then she went back to Chattanooga, which is her hometown. She started this. It's going to be a very big operation, kind of like a gallery space, a residency, I think they're going to do probably art class, art, like community engagement, kind of younger kid art class stuff. I think it's like very multifaceted,
right.
And it's just kind of getting off the ground.
Okay, cool. Now that sounds really good. And I know I've only been there a couple of times, but I know they have some really cool like museums and is kind of bigger structures than what we have here. So that's really cool. And I know I wanted to ask you about Kentucky because I know with your work now, and I think it's been growing as far as your connection to like maybe your ancestors, or maybe not as far as ancestors, but like familiar ties and kind of relating to people who have done their own art making in your family. And I love your connection to your grandmother. My grandmother quilted too, but I never did anything with her. And I love that you collaborated with her. And you're doing these really amazing house coats and these amazing blue ribbon awards and all these things that so many parents and so many caregivers can relate to. There's a lot of caregiving that's happening that I feel like people are thinking more about because of having to be more careful and thinking about other people's wellness more than ever. So I guess I'd like to know more about your relationship with your grandmother and how that kind of grew into your art that you're doing at this moment with your current projects.
Yeah. Yeah. So my grandmother on my mom's side of the family is from Eastern Kentucky. She's from Whitesburg, or grew up and lived her life, in Whitesburg. And so, yeah, growing up, she taught me how to quilt and sew, but I never really brought it into my work. I was kind of always an art student and always studying art. And in undergrad, I went to undergrad actually in Tennessee. At Suwannee.
I saw that one of my best friends went to Suwannee, I think, for her graduate degree. But I've heard really good things about that school.
Yeah. So when I was, when I was in undergrad, I was an art major at Suwannee, and I started doing a lot of video work, and I got into documentary work, and through this project that I did, where we went to Trenchtown, Jamaica, and I worked with a couple of professors from Suwannee to do this documentary in Jamaica. And it got me thinking about my own family heritage and like people in Eastern Kentucky. And so I ended up going to be with my grandmother and started filming her. So started like making little short video vignettes of her and of also just like women in Eastern Kentucky and kind of created this piece that was about kind of like a shared love of home and of place, but then all these other kind of issues that pertain to the area. So some was like, were about education or coal mining or like drug issues or just like the future of home or like what they wanted to like their home or their future to be like, or reflecting on what home was to them. So actually that was my graduate school work too. So it was like a 5-year-old girl talking about it. And then like an 85-year-old woman reflecting. So I got interested in working with I like collaborating with my grandmother, cause it was, but I never really thought of it like that. So I like it. But anyway, so she also taught me how to quilt while I was there, but I never brought that quilting aspect into my work and never did any kind of fabric or fiber arts work until moving to New York.
Right.
So yeah, so like I did a lot of video work with her that I think that very much ends up influencing the work that I'm doing now, although it's very drastically different work because it's kind of more serious and video and just a totally different format. And then when I was in New York, so after graduate school, I moved to New York City and started working in film. So I worked at a film school. I taught film classes. I taught video editing. I ended up working for CBS doing a documentary series. And I was like editing other people's films. And I was like, you know, I don't think this is my path. Like, I just got sick of like staring at a computer screen. I got sick of of like working on these long format pieces that I like didn't have full control of. So I was like, you know, I wanted to use my hands. I wanted to get back into making something.
Right. And it's such a tedious art form when you edit. And I feel like when it's not your own film, that sounds more grueling. Even if you love the process, that sounds tedious in a way that's not as enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still fun. I still like miss it. And I think one day I'll go and make videos again, but so I picked up this quilt that my grandmother had started and just started, you know, getting my hands back into making something, and then went home to Kentucky over the holidays. And this was kind of, there was like lots of gun violence happening at this time. It was like leading up to the 2016 election. So there was like a lot of gun debate happening in the media. And I was at a friend's house that had this wall of handguns. And I was like, oh, I wonder what a wall of like stuffed quilted guns would look like. So I was just quilting. So that was kind of the first time I like incorporated fabric and sewing into my artwork. Right. I'm doing air quotes right now.
Right.
Yeah, into my practice, I guess you'd say.
And it's so powerful. I didn't realize that's where the gun imagery, I guess, first culminated or started, because I feel like it's such a strong symbol, because there's like extended family members that I have here where they're part of that culture, and it's just like just wearing a mask in East Tennessee, there's groups of people that are so irate and so like dumbfounded by the idea of showing care for others. And I feel like by taking a symbol that's so strong, like a gun, and it represents more of kind of an ego theme to me, and you brought this equally powerful but more like kind of a loving idea to kind of taking away that negative power. It's the way, at least from what I've seen in person, like they're so powerful but not in a way that's, you know, that's scary anymore. So that's really cool that's where it came from.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I was making those, I was thinking a lot about these, exactly what you're talking about, kind of this like macho, like masculine symbol of, why kind of stripping away the way that a gun usually is perceived. And also kind of getting to the fundamental questioning for me of like, why is our country so comfortable with these weapons? And then kind of exploring these issues of like gun ownership and masculinity by kind of like exaggerating the barrels and making them droopy and kind of phallic.
Right. Yeah. And it breeds so much. It brings so much dimension to what I think some people are already starting to think when they see something that's like a gun, or if I see like a Confederate flag or anything that has such a potent, like charged image. Mm-hmm. But I feel like you're making it's so well-rounded, because like these are human beings that are trying to mostly present as macho and not knowing that it's okay to be, to show how multifaceted you are. And the first time I saw your work, I know I saw at least one of your bloated flags. It was one of the gold ones, I think. And it was in Atlanta at the Museum of Design, which I had never been to before. And I loved it. I loved the size of the museum and how intimate it was. And it was, I believe, in 2018. And the other work, it was a group show, and there was all kinds of work related to civil rights issues. But the show overall had such a strong presence. But your work, there's a like more of an installation type piece too. But it was just so cool because it felt like a human presence, and I feel like that's hard to create sometimes. But it definitely had that when I was there. But how has it been to, I guess, over time, now that we've gotten through a second election, or the most recent election, and of course things aren't going to change rapidly, but they're going to at least get a little bit better, hopefully. But how's it felt for you as an artist to be living right now, aside from the pandemic, but with what's happening politically too? Like, have you felt, I guess, just like more of like kind of like more hopefulness, or have you felt more complicated feelings, and has that affected your work?
I feel relieved for sure a little bit after the election results. I feel like I couldn't, it was stressful, right? Yeah. It's like, I'm so glad that we don't have to do that for like 4 years. I mean, be on an edge, and like, I feel like I am somebody who fall into the like news cycle trap where I listen to the news too much, and it's not good for you if you to do right. that. It's pretty bad. So I feel like I've taken a step back from the news, and I feel okay about that, or like more comfortable with that. I feel like we're like in better hands, even though you're right. It's like change is not going to happen very quickly, and we're not even in the new administration, but I just feel like I'm like, whew.
It feels healthier already. I feel like,
even though we're in the midst of like a very dark time, with the pandemic and everything, it's going to be a very dark winter. I still feel some form of relief, even right. if it's maybe a fake relief.
Right. Yeah, totally. And with I'm guessing your most recent projects are the things like the house coats, mm-hmm. And you're still working with fiber and soft sculpture. And I think, I've listened to you on the Jealous Curator podcast, and I yeah. think that's how I first saw your work, was through her book that she made that featured it. And I think I remember you talking about the house coats initially starting on stretchers, or maybe that was something else.
Yeah.
But I was wondering what it's been like to work on those, and what kind of stage you're in as far as making that body of work.
Yeah. That's a great question. I spent like a couple months doing these house coats on kind of almost like they looked a little bit like a relief painting. They were like stretched, like a quilt that was a little bit more 3D and stretched onto canvas, or like a canvas stretcher board. I'm not a painter, so I'm not very good at the terminology.
I paint, but I am, but I don't know the terminology. I don't build my own stretchers, so you're yeah. good. So I don't know either.
Stretcher bars. But anyway, yeah, so what the concept of that was, that piece was like, I started thinking about house coats around the time that I had my daughter, and just like how bodily it is to like care for an infant child, and how like I was like around the house a lot right after giving birth, and like, you know, wearing robes and being kind of like half naked, and my grandmother, the one who's taught me how to quilt, she was somebody who, she was very much like a homemaker, you know, like she had a garden, she cooked, she cleaned, she quilted. So when she was home, and if I was over there, she would be like, well, do you want to put on a house coat? Like, so like, we're going to be working in the house, let's wear our house coat. So I see it as this, kind of like a uniform for being a homemaker, like a homemaker workwear. And so I started thinking about that as this symbol of like being a person who's working, who's like in the home, or like a caregiver. And so I knew I wanted to incorporate that somehow into work. And at that time I was also doing a lot of quilts. Just, I didn't see the quilts as my work at all. Like, I was like, oh, I'll never show these in a gallery. These are just like this thing that I do on the side. But then I was like, why don't I see this as my work? Like, if I were a painter and I was just, you know, doing a little study, I could call it a study, and there'd be no question that it would be art, because it would be paint on a canvas, or, like, so I wanted to play around with my thought of like putting these house coats on these stretcher boards, was like playing with that idea of like elevating the house coat to this higher art piece or elevating this like homemaker thing, but they really just didn't work on the stretchers. I didn't like them. I was like, I hate looking at these. I don't like them. I don't think like, why can't this just be a physical coat in space, like taking up more space, physical space. So I finally made an actual, like an oversized 3D actual house coat that you can put on. And they're made from lots of different quilts, different pieces of clothing that like maybe no longer fits me anymore because I've had a child, or some of the like receiving blankets or baby blankets that you're given in the hospital and stuff. I use those materials in the actual coat itself. And I also incorporated in the first one and the second one, actually, these like t-shirts that you would wear at the beach.
Yeah, I saw those. Yeah. Where it's like the airbrush like body with the bikini. Yeah. Or
like a sexy bikini body lady that you would wear over a bathing suit. So it's kind of like this facade of this like sexy body. So I was thinking about all of these different personas and these different identities that you put on as like a woman and as a mother and kind of like the weight of all of that by making this like giant oversized thing that coat that kind of swallows you. Yeah. So I've made two of them. So I made one of them and I like envisioned COVID also kind of like messed up the way that I wanted to display them. Like I originally was like, oh, I want to do a whole installation of this closet where these different house coats are hanging in this closet and they're, you can like try them on and like make this whole environment. And I got a grant actually to do that. But then obviously there's not a lot of shows happening. There's definitely not a lot of shows happening where you are going to put on a coat, like right. Have other people put on the coat, you know? So I got an opportunity to show it in this gallery in Newburgh. So the first house coat is hanging there. And then I made these ribbons that we can talk about later, that I made for a show here. And actually I'm also displaying my quilts, which I never thought that I'd show in a gallery space, but they're like, we want to show your quilts. So I was like, cool. I will hang up these quilts that I've made that I never kind of saw as my like work. And then, so I made a second house coat like really quickly, which was crazy.
But I saw a second one because I remembered that t-shirt so vividly that has like the woman in the thong. And I think the other one, does it have more of like almost like a tensile, or does it have like a pattern that looks like tensile? Or okay,
it has it's this I guess it's a sequin. Oh, actually, you know what? I have it. Well, I guess this is an audio, but I have some of the material over here. I'll show you. But it's like a sequin, but it's also
it's kind like of a mylar or thicker than mylar, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, thicker than that. Yeah, I got this fabric a while ago in the garment district and I was like, oh, I'll use that one day. And then finally I was like, oh, I'm going to put it on the back of this house coat.
I love it. And I love that you've mixed so many materials. I didn't realize you had used receiving blankets because I feel like I have a friend who lives in South Korea who just had a baby and the same exact big baby hats and receiving blankets are there with like the blue and pink stripes. So I guess mm-hmm. it's like a universal, like that kind of thin cotton or muslin material. Cool. But I love that you're kind of mixing like ideas of like glamour or ideas of how people have like what you're saying with personas in the body. Because I know when there's something that's a big event like that, that changes your body and it's emotional on top of that, it's just, it can really play with people's life for a long time. I know for whatever reason, my second time being pregnant, I had a harder time just like recovering just emotionally. And like it's interesting how it can be so different depending on like the person and the baby or which baby. So I love that you have so many representations of these different ideas, but it still relates to the rest of your work too, the color palette and the way that you piece things. I feel like you have your own language you've developed. So it looks like something that you've made, which is really special too. Yeah. But how many do you think you plan to make, or do you think you'll still do the more interactive feature someday when you're able to?
Yeah, I'd like to. I've also been playing. I'm hoping to start another one maybe next week. I kind of took a little bit of a break because I really busted out the second one to this point where I was like very tired and exhausted from. I was like, I need a studio break. So I haven't started the third one yet, but I just like ordered some more cotton batting to get started on that. But I don't know. I want to make, I'm thinking like five maybe, or we'll see.
Right.
And then I was also like, I imagined them hanging. So I had somebody make me a giant wooden hanger, but then I don't know. I like how they are, how they kind of take on this more bodily form when they're on a mannequin. Or so, yeah, I'm trying to figure out like how to display them, how I want them to be displayed, or if they need to be like draped over something, or like, I don't know.
Right.
I imagine myself having more time to play around with that and kind of experiment with that. But then, you know, opportunities arise and deadlines sometimes are good. And I, yeah, just went for it, showed them already. So
the material that you just showed, it reminds me, and I hope it's okay if I bring up your daughter, and what's her name, is it Petra?
Yeah.
Is that because you had that incredible Halloween costume, that Knit Cave, based on the Knit Cave soft sculpture? So what was that? Were you able to do like some kind of small like Halloween celebration, or did you guys just kind of walk around the residency? Or,
well, Wasaic did a Halloween parade. So they got artists came up and decorated floats, and then they did like a little parade through the town, which was pretty cute. And then there's a bar here that has like a ton of outdoor space. So yeah, we like took her to the parade. I made this giant Knit Cave sound suit, but out of fringe, and it was really funny. She was like walking around like
it's so cute, and it mimics the fringe like on your flags and like the colors, which I loved. But as soon as I saw it, like I knew it was a Knit Cave reference. Then I'm like, wait a minute, that's a baby, and it looks so fun, and it looked like she loved it. Like how did she react? Was it just kind of normal, I guess? Like, I feel like babies are just kind of like whatever.
Yeah, she liked it, but I think it also kind of, it was so heavy, like because all the fringe was so long and heavy that like it also kind of acted as like a weighted blanket. Like she was like very she like walked around and thought it was really like funny. It was like, ah. And then she was like a little bit more like subdued.
Right.
Like, is she okay? And she was just like a weighted blanket on her.
That's so cute. My daughter loves, she's really into bangles, and like she just loves to have things like up her arms, and it's like all the way up to her elbow. And my son wasn't like that, but it's interesting, like just their interactions with space or like with clothing is so individual, and I just love that. And I love like when they get older and they pick out costumes, it's always really cool. But that's cool.
The Petra phase where like everything is a hat. It's like put everything on her head and hat. It's like, yeah, that's a bowl.
So cute, right?
But okay.
Yeah. Are there other families or other dynamics at the residency that are like similar to yours, or is she able to like see other kids? I guess with the virus though, you wouldn't be able to interact too much.
And then there are other kids here. So there's that bar that I just mentioned down the street, which actually just closed for the winter. They're just doing takeout now, but it's kind of this like big open area that she liked to go and like observe these other kids, or some kids would like interact with her. There's a lot of kids in the town. Some of them are older, but yeah, she's not really playing with a lot of other kids. When we were in New York, she had like two friends that, like, the parents, the families live near us, so we would go to the park together. And I do kind of miss that for her. But yeah, it's right. A weird time where it's like, maybe I'd put her in a program or some kind of daycare thing, but
yeah,
it's like they're all closing down all the time.
It's bizarre. My son was in the preschool at my daughter's age, and then with Opal, I can tell that she's already like a people person, which is amazing because she's not able to be around people a lot. And we have a porch, and if she just, like, anyone that walks by, she's like fervently waving and saying hi to them, which is super sweet. But it's just, it's so weird because it's just like I wish she could have that and have more closeness with people, but it's just how it is. But I would love to ask, like, in regards to family and studio practice, and you've talked a lot about this before. So I guess I'm curious about how it is now. Now that you've been a mom like for a while and still practicing art. And I think your husband is an artist as well?
Yeah, he's a photographer.
Okay. Cause my partner and I, we're both artists, and we both have like our own schedules too. And I'm always curious to know with other people what they do to have studio time and how they juggle that. And how has it been, I guess, at the residency? Has it been easier now that you're at a place where it's like designated space? Has that made a difference for you, or is it kind of similar to before?
It has been easier here, I think, because a few things. Well, okay. The pandemic has caused my husband to have less work, which is good and bad. It's bad for income, but also it's good because he has more time to be with our daughter and to watch her. We've been getting babysitters up here. We found a babysitter who's been really great with her, and that is easier. It's easier to have a babysitter here because there's space, and especially during COVID, where it's like she can go outside very easily and be outside. And then also it's like, well, first of all, babysitters in New York City are more expensive.
Right.
it's just a more expensive city. And then also my studio was about a 25-minute walk from my apartment. So it's like all this time spent like paying someone to like commute there and back. And then yeah, like here I can just pop over to the studio. It's like a 1-minute walk, or I can like pop back and get something for lunch, or like pop back and see Petra, if I want to. But yeah, it's just like a giant, it's like you have to be in constant conversation with your partner, or with me, with how Josh and I do it. It was like, okay, like, what does it look like this week? Like, cause he does commercial photography, and then he also like has his own projects that he wants to do. Like right now he's building a skate ramp in a barn over there, you know, like, which is like it's all part of, you know, like, sure, building a skate ramp is not like a financial job that he needs to be doing, but it's like very good for his mental health and very good for like his overall well-being. So like taking all of that into account and he knows that I need studio time to like stay sane, but also to make work because I have shows, or because I'm like making work means selling work, which means money. It's like all connected. So yeah, it's like, I feel like we are constantly having conversations like, okay, well, what does this week look like? It's all really week by week, which I think the pandemic has made a lot of people have to live that reality that we kind of feel fortunate because we were already living that a little bit. Like we were already never had stable income, or like, you know, we're always like taking it week by week.
Right.
So we do that with like studio time and with like, well, this week I have, you know, I have this show coming up, I have a deadline, I have to do this. And like taking that into account, be like, okay, well, I can watch Petra, or okay, should we spend money on a babysitter so we both can do work? So like today I watched Petra in the morning. We got a babysitter for like 3 hours so that he could edit photos that he took. And then, so I could be in the studio at the same time. And then we kind of like tag teamed. Yeah. It's just a giant relay. tag.
Yeah, it's you're taking pieces of time and kind of piecing them together in a way that's so different from Before Kids, but it's definitely, I mean, and I don't think it matters to people to be an artist and to be a caregiver, but I feel like it only adds more layers to your work to be doing that. Because I know there's people who have been confused about why I keep making art, or assuming that it's only harder with kids, and it can be hard, but I feel like there would be other things that would be hard too. And I don't know. I love it. It's super challenging, but it's also rewarding too.
Yeah, I think it changes the way that you work in the studio. Like you're not gonna like go sit in the studio and like scroll on Instagram or like waste your studio time. And also oftentimes you've thought about what you're gonna do while you're outside of the studio, that when you're in the studio or you have the time to make work, that you're like, you're doing it.
Right.
You've already thought it out.
I think that's my favorite aspect. Like, at least for me, when I was especially an undergrad, I spent so much time experimenting in ways that were more just like, I guess it's like getting like the motions out, and I'm glad I had that time. But I feel like I do more experimenting in my mind, just kind of like realizing like no, I don't need to go, I don't need like this material yet, or I'm not ready to deal with this symbol yet. Or there's something that's really weighing down on me that I really want to work with. And then that's what I do. So I feel like I'm making more quality work, but I don't know. And something else I was curious about, where you do have like a family influence, or at least your grandmother's influence. I feel like artists that work with family or ancestors tend to have more objects or maybe mementos or photographs around them, even if they're not directly referencing them for imagery. But I wonder, do you have anything like that, or any kind of practice that's with your studio practice that involves like special objects or anything that represents other people that might influence your work?
That's a good question. I do have this framed ribbon that actually was what inspired me to make that ribbon series I just did. So my grandmother and I made this quilt together that won first place at the Letcher County Homemakers Club.
I saw I think it was a plaque that you had. Is that what you're talking? Well, yes.
Framed the ribbon in like between two pieces of glass. So it's, I have it framed. But it's just like a regular blue ribbon. But yeah, I was thinking about that. I've always like wanted to do something with blue ribbons and like this like concept of homemaker, or this like word homemaker. And then the pandemic hit and more women have lost their job, or like have had to step down from their jobs. I think it was like in the month of September, like 1.1 million people left their job. 80% of those people were women. And it makes total sense. It's like, I see it in my friends, or like the workload of the home is all put on usually the earner that makes less, which is usually, unfortunately, the woman. And I also felt it, even though I have like an amazing supportive husband who's very helpful, just like, I got so sick of cooking, or so sick of like baking stuff, or like thinking about meals, or like doing dishes. It's like all of a sudden we're all in this home together, and we're all like, you have to think about so many things that you didn't really have to do before, I guess.
Right. It makes more work in a different, or the workload changes when you go from getting to be outside of your home to inside, and when there's more people spending time there, or even if it's just yourself spending more time there, there's days where it feels like you're just doing laundry, and which I can't stand. It's just like, because when you're creative, it's just like, there's only so much you can do of that stuff where you're like, okay, I know what I want to do. Yeah. Now I need to have that time to experiment and work on it. But How has it been to make these ribbons, and have you've displayed them already? And how has it been as far as, I guess, the reception for them? Have there been other people that can relate to, I'm sure, what they mean for them?
Yeah. So for the people who are listening, I did these blue ribbons that kind of look like ribbons you get at a horse show or like a swim meet or something, you know, like different styles of blue ribbons. And they say stuff like number one laundry folder or dishwasher or short order cook, all of these kind of, or therapist or teacher, all of these roles that that parents have had to take on, but also like predominantly women have bared the brunt of during this pandemic, and kind of like this congratulatory, like, you deserve first place, you deserve this ribbon, you know, like, you're doing a good job. This kind of, but also this element of competition that I think is there in kind of this like social media and motherhood and all the, I think that there's that facet of it too. But anyway, I posted them on Instagram, and a lot of like artist mothers have reached out, or just people in general. I don't know exactly if they're artist mothers, but people are just like, oh yeah, I deserve number one dishwasher. Like, I totally, this resonates with me. Or, oh yes, like, I cannot fold another piece of laundry.
Right. And the scale of them, are they larger like than regular blue ribbons? Because they have this feel. I was hoping. And I love the sheen of it. Is it some kind of a satin fabric?
Yeah. Or? We have a couple different kinds of fabric, but the ones that are like show ribbons are very shiny. The kind of like horse show ribbon. I'm from Kentucky, so I feel like I saw a lot of horse show ribbons growing up from.
Right. We have a really big fair here called, it's the Appalachian Fair. Oh, and cool. It's once a year for, I think, a week, maybe it's 2 weeks, but there's this whole designated area. And there's, even though it's only once a year, there's like highway signs that like, with like permanent like signage that has like the name of it. So it's like this big deal, and it's so bizarre. But they have the cool part, and the part that I always enjoyed is they have like all the best pies, and they have like a lot of food related, but sewing related like competitions. And that competition aspect, I think, is really true because.
How would I go to that?
Yeah, it's really cool. There's the parts that are uneasy for me is like it gets so crowded, and there's all walks of life, which I love. Yeah. At nighttime, for me, it would be overwhelming. But the work was so amazing. There's lots of quilt tops and quilt making, even in clothing and aprons and all kinds of homeware and stuff like that.
In Tennessee.
Yeah.
It's in August. I'll be in Tennessee in August.
Yes. It's like, I think it's the first 2 weeks every year. And they have like country stages, but it's super old school too. Like, I think the rides have not been updated, and it's like from like the 50s or 60s. They're really old. Right. But the competition aspect that you're bringing in, I think, is important because it's so true. And I feel like with the pandemic, I've seen it more with like things like homeschool, or even I have a teaching background and I'm completely working from home. But when I was working in elementary school, which I loved, and I loved the students, and I always had some coworkers that I loved, but there's so much competition even with non-parents or even with the male teachers, where it was just things that shouldn't matter.
Yeah,
we're competitive, and it's interesting when that happens, when it's something that should have people in the center of the focus when you're trying to run a household. But I feel like it happens, and it's interesting to think about. Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah.
I wonder. I mean, I hope that COVID, I don't know. We'll see what it's like in August. Hopefully it'll be we'll have this vaccine and everything will be fine and there'll be a fair.
Yeah, yeah. And it's right next to a graveyard. So there's like, you have to drive over this graveyard and then it's these giant fairgrounds. But it's in Gray, Tennessee, which is where we have an archaeological dig too. And they discovered all these fossils. Oh. So it's really bizarre. And then, so that's like right next to Johnson City. And on the other side, we have Dollywood, like an hour west. So we've got two big, like, amusement park type places, but it's pretty cool. Yeah. Well, there's one, I guess, last question. And I always ask my guests, if you don't have one, it's okay. But I always like to find out some kind of work of art that might be influencing you, or just something that you've seen recently that you like, and it could be any kind of medium, and or a movie that you might have seen, or one that you just love that has stuck with you for years that you think might be some kind of influence or just be important to you. Maybe it doesn't show in your work, but I'm always curious what kind of images artists have from other people's work that kind of stick with them.
Well, speaking of Dolly Parton, I just rewatched Dolly. What is it called? Smoky Mountain Christmas.
Yes, I need to see that again. It's been like 2 years since I've seen it. I try to watch every year, but
it's so crazy. There's like, why is there like a witch in this? Like,
yeah, it's bizarre.
Aspect is so weird. I actually fell asleep towards the end, so I kind of like, and I haven't seen it in probably 10 years. So I kind of can't even remember what happens in the end. But so I watched the beginning part of that, I guess, recently. I'm like kind of a notorious fall asleep during movies.
That's person. How I am now. Yeah, I used to watch movies obsessively, and I finished a film a couple of days ago, and it's been a really long time. So it felt like I need to make a blue ribbon for this being a movie watcher. We saw a Dolly movie. My son loves her. I don't know if your daughter's part of the Imagination Library where she sends books out to all kids.
My niece lives in Tennessee.
Yeah. But
I think you have to live in Tennessee for that.
It started in Tennessee, and then it became national, and now it's worldwide. Oh, but wow. You have to sign up. I guess there's a website or something. But cool. That same company or offshoot makes movies. So there's all kinds of Dolly Christmas movies that were made like a year ago by the Imagination Library. And it's like Hallmark movies. They just like pop them out, and Dolly's in all of them. So it's really cool. There's some wild ones.
That's awesome. But another film that I did this film screening series where it was like artist curated cinema. So artists got to, I did a little artist talk and then chose a film to screen that was like related to my work or like that I was inspired by. And there's this guy, his name's Adam Green. He did this film called Adam Green's Aladdin, and it's amazing. You can watch it on YouTube.
Okay, I'll write it down.
It's like all paper mache, and actually some of my friends are in it. That's how I know about it. But it's just really cool. I just really like it. How I always wanted to work in paper mache, and I just don't. But I just love paper mache as a medium.
And I could see it with soft sculpture, too. It has more of an organic look usually. So
yeah, similar vibe. And then I actually watched this other film recently that a friend of mine told me to watch. It's called The Border.
Okay. I don't know that one either.
It's the same people that did Let the Right One In, the like vampire film.
Okay. I've heard of that one.
It's one of those films that you're like, whoa, this is, there's a lot of like turns that happen that you're like, wow, I did not see that coming. And then it's another one that you're like kind of can't shake from your head. It's pretty bizarre, but it's a Swedish film that involves trolls.
Okay, that sounds really cool. I like that. My son's really into like fantasy, so there's lots of like medieval stories and goblins, and I don't know. Okay. I'll look into it.
Hopefully this is not for your son, though.
Yeah, he gets scared really easily too. So some cartoons don't even make the cut.
Yeah,
but cool. I'll check this out.
Yeah, well,
I guess we're about. Yeah, we have like 2 minutes. I guess, is there anything else before we go that you want to share about your current body of work or anything that you're doing now? I feel like what you've shared already, it's been so amazing to hear about this, the way you exhibit things and the way that you tie in these different themes. I feel like you're really good at holding a mirror to what's happening a lot, and that it's in a way that's very loving and very caring, but also very, there's just a lot of reverence in it too. And I think it's hard to do that. So I always enjoy seeing your work in person.
Thank you. That is what I strive to do, is like kind of walk that line of divisiveness, but with humor and with comfort. And yeah, thank you.
Well, cool. Thanks
for having me on your podcast.
Yes, thank you so much. Thanks
for teaching about this fair.
Yes, totally. And if we'll have to go together. And I mean, you'd have a place to stay, because then Petra would have another baby to play with.
Yeah,
so that would be cool.
Children play together.
Yes.
Another
some cotton candy. Cool. Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to following your work and how it continues to unfold at your residency. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good night.